The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone. And can you hear okay? This evening, I wanted to talk a little bit about one of the most basic elements of meditation practice that's maybe is so basic that maybe gets overlooked in its important role. And it's a very important term or factor of mind or activity of mind for developing concentration or focus or steadiness or unification of mind, gathering mind together. And the term in ancient Buddhist language or Pali is vichara. And in English, it's sometimes translated as sustained application of attention or sustained application of thought. And it's usually paired with another activity of the mind that's called vitakka, which is then translated into English as the initial application of mind, or the initial application of attention. So it's the initial application and the sustained application of attention. And so these are, in certain meditation circles, these are very important technical terms, so I'm sure you're already bored by these terms. And what it has to do with is if you're going to meditate in such a way that you're actually going to choose to pay attention to something, like say you're going to pay attention to your breath, there has to be somehow or other, at some point, a turning of the mind, of attention, to focus on this. And then you have to sustain the focus on the breath. So you have to somehow, the mind wanders off, and you're off someplace else, then you bring the mind back to the breath. Then you have to stay there. So the bringing the mind back and placing the mind on something, attention on something, is the initial application. The sustained application is in staying there, sustaining that attention. So it's not so, always so easy. And to give you a non-meditation example, many years ago, my wife and I were given tickets to the symphony. And it's kind of rare. I haven't gone to symphony very much in my life. But there we were at the San Francisco Symphony, and we had these good seats looking down at the orchestra playing. And I could certainly say to myself, Gil, now pay attention to the music. But my mind was so novel to be there that my mind spent its time looking at down into the orchestra pit, into orchestra, and thinking about and analyzing and making comments about what I saw about and what I was actually seeing, so much so that I wasn't really listening to the music. And it took me for a while to kind of realize that actually I was much more interested in the trombone players and what they were doing and, you know, watching the different, you know, what was going on with the violin players and, you know, why those drummers weren't doing anything and what they were doing when they don't do anything. But after a while I realized I'd come to listen to the music. And so I tried listening to the music, and my mind, since I was looking at the orchestra, my mind would get pulled away into this commentary, this world of analyzing what was there. Until finally, I decided, you know, this is really not working so well. I'm here for the music. So I closed my eyes. And with my eyes closed, only then can I sustain the attention of the music, take it in and enjoy it. And I did that for most of the first half. Then we had an intermission, and then we came back. And when I came back, my mind was settled enough, calm enough, that my mind wasn't inclined to get caught up in thinking anymore and analyzing what was going on. I was just kind of settled and quiet. And then I could watch the orchestra play the music and listen at the same time. But I think when I first came, my mind was so busy or something that it's kind of activated that it, you know, it got involved with what I saw. So some meditators are very good at the first of these two factors, the vitakka, which is the initial application. They can come back. They can place their mind there. But it's the sustained attention that is difficult. And, you bring your mind back to the breath, and next moment you're off again someplace. Or you bring it back for a few breaths and you're off. But sustaining it, keeping it there, is not so, you know, not that doesn't really work so well. One reason for this is that the first, the initial application, is a coarser activity. It's an easier activity to do, whereas the sustained attention involves a more subtle movement of the mind. And so it's easy to do coarse things, but you need fine motor skills to do, you know, more refined things. And so the sustained attention requires more refined mental skills to kind of stay there. Also, once you're there, it's easy to get distracted. It's easy to kind of thoughts arise, and the mind gets more interested in the thoughts or the sounds or the activities around. And so a lot of other things can seem more important. And you can remember, I'm supposed to be meditating, and you think that's important, you come back, but then it's not that interesting to stay there with the breath sometimes. There are times when your focus of meditation, the breath or the sensations or whatever it might be, can seem like the most boring thing in the universe. And why would anybody in their right mind sit there watching their breath? There is all these wonderful things you can do, and you know, you have your whole the whole world available to you in your pocket through your iPhone. You know, why should you sit there and do something as boring as, you know, sustain the attention and the breath going in, going out? And so one of the important things to learn in meditation is how to sustain the attention and keep it there. So a little bit more about the analogies. So the initial application is sometimes likened to placing a cloth on a brass bowl. And then the sustained application is polishing the bowl, keeping the rubbing the bowl with the hand. Or another analogy used in the ancient world is that of it's relatively easy to and coarse to hit the bell, but then it's more subtle the ringing of the bell. And the initial application is like the hitting of the bell, and the and sustained application of attention is the ringing. It's a subtle ringing, the tuning into that. And it's hard to stay there with it. You know, as it gets more and more subtle, the mind drifts off. A beautiful analogy I like is that of a bird flapping its wing to take flight is like the initial application. It takes more work. The bird, with its wings spread out, gliding through the air on the updrafts, is like this sustained attention. And sometimes I get the feeling sometimes when I'm really deep in the meditation that it's kind of like I've caught the surf. I've caught the wave. And I'm kind of surfing along. It's quite delicious to kind of like, you know, to feel like you're completely there and planing along and involved. But it's not easy to learn that sustained attention to be there because of all the different forces of distraction. So you'll find in different teachers who teach meditation, they'll translate this word vitakka, the sustained attention, in two different ways. Some of them translate it as just a sustained application of attention, and some translate it as sustained application of thought. Because the word vitakka means to examine, and to reflect on or examine or investigate. And so there's something about the vitakka that's more than just keeping your attention there, but it's keeping attention there in a particular way where you get to know the object, you get to feel the object, you get to know what you're investigating, you're getting more familiar with it. Some teachers talk about it being like the function of sustaining attention is to keep the mind anchored in wherever you're going to be, pay attention to. I like to think of it sometimes as the commitment to stay with whatever you're chosen to pay attention to, that you're committed. The ancient texts also talk about this second quality, the sustained attention, as being a subtle pressure, where you kind of subtle commitment pressure to stay there, you know, to keep the mind, push the mind, press the mind against the object, stay there, stay there, stay there. It's a little bit of work involved. And the work that the analogy for the work is in the ancient world is that of kind of like kneading dough. You take, you have dry flour, and actually the ancient world, they didn't use flour, they used soap powder as the analogy, but for us we used it sometimes flour, right, this way. We take dry flour and we sprinkle it with water, pour water, a little bit of water in, and then we knead it and knead it and knead it until we have dough. And then we knead the dough. And so that mixing the water in, so the water saturates all the flour, is the work of the sustained attention. So we stay there, stay there, stay there, so that something can be transformed and changed inside of us. So all of our attention is completely permeated with present moment attention. Kind of like me, keeping the eyes closed in the symphony. After a while, I was settled enough that my attention could be completely focused on the music, because I was kind of, my mind was, I don't know if it's the right analogy, but saturated or permeated with attention making. So some people are very good at this initial, and what's hard is to stay there. Now, one of the functions of staying on track, staying there, is that it's a protection from the mind wandering off easily. And there are a tremendous number of distractions that can pull you off. But if you can stay focused and not wander off into thought, stay one place, then the distracted mind, the force of distraction, begins to quiet down, begins to relax, give up maybe. And so over time, the movement of agitation, of distraction, of preoccupation settles away because you're not, it doesn't have a chance to be reinforced. Again, in one of the ancient analogies, I don't know if it's a good analogy for meditation, but it's an analogy of how you train a horse. Maybe there's many ways of training a horse, but you take a wild horse and you tie it with a long rope to a stake. And so the horse runs around, jumps around, does what it does. But eventually, it can't get free. It's tied. And slowly, the horse quiets down. And finally, kind of quiets down, gives up. And then at that point, I guess, the horse trainer can come up to the horse and start training it because it's kind of given up its wildness or its protest or its rebellion or whatever it does. So the same thing with the mind. Sometimes the mind has this amazing capacity to rebel, or amazing capacity to protest or get distracted in the most creative and imaginative ways. I mean, it's really amazing how in certain times in my meditation, I've come up with the most important possible things to think about. It's like you have the great American novel, or you have, you suddenly it's creative thought and you have to think about this, or some really important, you realize you have to plan your menu for your dinner tonight. And it's like, it's so important to do this activity. And so, there's all these thoughts can come up, and sometimes all these lawyers in the mind will argue the case of why it's much more important to think about and this distraction than it is to stay on track. After all, the breath is kind of a boring thing, right? And the great American novel, your dinner plans are much more important. But if you can stay on track and sustain the attention, then the forces of distraction begin to quiet down. It becomes easier and easier to stay on track. But more important, as we become less fragmented or distracted, or centrifugal forces that pull us away from center relax, then there's this beautiful way in which things start getting aligned, lining up. getting harmonized or gathering together. And you know, you know, when you were, maybe some of you when you were little kids, at least in my elementary school, I don't know if this is universal, but if you brought a magnet with you to school, then they had the sand in the sand boxes. They had all this little what is it called, iron filings or something in the sand. Is that right? And you'd go with a magnet like this, and over the sand, and the iron filings or whatever would line up. Did you, anybody else do that? Some of you did, huh? Some of you did. It's so long ago, I remember. So the same thing, if you stay and stay and stay on the object of your attention as you meditate, not only does the force of distraction quiet down, which feels very nice to have that quiet and calming, but also a variety of different emotional and psychological and mental factors and physical factors come along and get aligned and harmonize and work together with the concentration, the focus you have. And to have the different psychophysical forces of the body work in harmony with your focus as opposed to against your focus brings a tremendous sense of well-being into a being. And the experiences of ecstasy, of rapture, that sometimes people talk to about that happens in meditation, are a product of this gathering together, aligning, harmonizing of all the different factors, so that all of what we're about is all focused on the same thing for the same purpose. You know, if you sit down to meditate, and it's your intention, you know, meditation's a good thing, so you're kind of your intention of the moment is to, you know, sit and focus on your breath. But you sit down to meditate, but you're a little bit hungry, and so you start thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. And so there's thoughts about dinner. But then you had this near accident in your car coming here where someone did a really stupid thing in front of you in their car, and then they did something with their finger to you when they drove off. And so not only are you kind of filled with adrenaline and a little bit of fear, but you're also filled with irritation and self-righteousness. And so the leftover feelings of fear and self-righteousness are still circulating a little bit, this tension and energy in your system. And so there's a little bit those, you know, your stomach's still a little bit in a knot. And so you're sitting there, and so part of your attention's going to your knot, part of your attention's going to your hunger, part of your attention's going to the, you know, you're wanting for dinner. And then you're also kind of rehearsing what happened at work today. And then what else could be going on all at once? And then the person near you in the meditation hall has a Velcro jacket that they decide to take on and off and on and off. And so your mind is involved in many things all at, kind of almost at once, kind of going around. You know, it's fragmented. And so the idea of this vitaka, the sustained attention, just keep things focused, is that you can keep it, just stay there. Then things begin to settle down and get aligned. And not, rather than being fragmented, they all work together. So your thinking, your intention, your bodily sensations, what's going on in your body, your emotions even, are all connected to the concentration practice, the meditation practice. And with that kind of unification, as I said, comes a sense of well-being. And that sense of well-being can get stronger and stronger until it can be a very strong sense of joy and happiness. Some people call it rapture sometimes. And what's really delight about this kind of strong rapture or something is that it's a happiness and joy that's not dependent on anything going right in the world around you. You don't have to win the lottery. You don't have to get a raise. You don't have to get, you know, praise. Nothing has to happen in the world. You can just sit and calm and settle yourself and gather yourself together. And then lo and behold, by being gathered and centered, this beautiful sense of well-being begins to arise and to happen. So an analogy that I also like for this vichara, this sustained application of attention, is that of a boat traveling through the water, that you keep your attention at the bow of the boat, the front tip of the boat, as it cuts through the water. And as you do that, it separates the water, and the water, all the water separates to the side and flows to the side and back behind the boat. And so the boat just, everything washes away. And so the same thing, if you can keep your attention on, say, for example, the breath, a lot of things are going to come up. A lot of things are going to face you. Thoughts, feelings, emotions, body sensations, a lot of things. But you stay there and you imagine all those things that come up, you just let them kind of wash by. You just stay on focus, stay on focus, and let everything just wash by and wash off of you. Don't get distracted by them. Don't get involved in them. Or an analogy, it's somewhat similar, maybe it works better for some of you, is that say your breath is the primary focus of attention. So you keep your attention on your breath as if your breath is your umbrella. And everything else that might occur just washes off the top of the umbrella and you stay dry. So you have, think about your boss at work today, you think about you're hungry, you think about the person near you with the Velcro, and all those things might happen, but you just let it wash away, kind of fall off the side, just rolls off. You don't get involved. You don't pick it up. You can't be in control of the fact that those thoughts arise, but you have some role to play about whether you get involved in it or not. And so you stay. I'm not going to give in to anything. I'm going to stay there with the breath. I'm going to stay there with the breath. And I'm not going to allow myself to, I'm going to be alert enough to not allow myself to drift off into all the other things that might arise. I'm just going to stay there and let those be in the background and let them just wash off, wash off. It's very powerful to do this. And in the Buddha, in the ancient tradition, they say that one of the great benefits of this sustained attention is that it's an antidote to having doubt. So doubt can be a great hindrance to meditation. Am I doing the right thing? Am I far enough? Can I do it? Just this breath is boring. There must be more wonderful spiritual practices in this boring breath. I can't imagine this is a good thing to do. And all these thoughts and doubts about what you're doing can come up. And sometimes, on a retreat, doubt can be a phenomenal hindrance for people. Some of you, I'm sure, had struggled with doubt on retreats, for example. And one of the antidotes for doubt is not to solve the doubt or argue with the doubt, but is to just do the sustained attention, just stay there, and let the doubt thought just wash off the, roll off the umbrella or wash to the side of the boat as you keep your focus. Are you with me? Do you want to ask some questions? I was a little bit concerned that this talk today might be a little bit boring. This little technical aspect of meditation. Are you really with me? Or you would like to ask questions, or should I go on? Yes?
Is it vitaka and vichara?
It's vitaka, V-I-T-A-K-K-A, and vichara is V-I-C-A-R-A.
And which one? So vitaka is the sustained?
Vitaka is the initial, initial. And vichara is the sustained. And it's kind of nice to learn the Pali, the ancient words, because in certain, when people do not mindfulness meditation, but do concentration meditation practice in our tradition, sometimes as you go into the do it, the person who will guide you will teach you the Pali word and want you to kind of relate to it from the Pali word rather than the English word. So it's kind of nice to get it under your belt. Other questions? Yes?
It sounds like there's a difference between the way people teach sustained attention and sustained examination.
Yes, so there's a difference between, I'll repeat it. So it sounds like the people who say there's a difference, people teach differently, some say between sustained attention and sustained examination. Do you want me to say something about that? Yeah. So there are different, there are many different ways that people teach meditation in our tradition. There are different kinds of teachers. And some of them, in strong concentration, they say that you don't want any thinking at all. You just want to keep the attention there. Kind of the awareness is there, but there's no thinking about it. And other teachers say, no, that important part of this vichara is the examination, is the kind of staying there and having very simple thoughts about what you're paying attention to. And so, as you know, You can have a lot of thoughts that have nothing to do with meditation when you meditate. But you could also use thinking as a way of corralling your mind by thinking about what you're focusing on. So it can be very simple, ordinary, kind of not complicated analysis, but very simple think thought. You stay with a breath and say, oh, there's a long breath, there's a short breath. What does that breath feel like? How am I feeling it right now in the rib cage? How am I feeling my diaphragm? How am I feeling it in the belly? What kind of movement is it? What's the texture of the movement as I breathe in and out? So it's more like little simple, very simple examining questions to help you stay there. And some teachers think that's really important to do that examination, that looking. Other teachers say, no, not supposed to have any kind of activity like that at all. Just kind of keep it there, the commitment to stay present. So different teachers have different emphases. And the ones who don't want the no thinking involved, they tend to be the ones who are working towards a much deeper degree of concentration. A degree of concentration where you get so concentrated and absorbed in it that maybe you don't have any sense of where you are anymore. You're just completely involved. Those teachers that teach more of the examination aren't encouraging people to go that far in their concentration. And so sometimes I've heard these different teachers argue about who's right. What is this? Which one is right?
It's different aspects of consciousness.
It's different aspects of consciousness, but also, what's a thought? Question. There's thinking behind almost everything we do. It just sometimes it's very subtle and kind of background as opposed to discursive thinking, which is kind of loud. So, for example, I don't know if this is a good example, but say that someone sends you off on a task. And the task is to go down the street to the recycling bin with a little bag full of finished empty toilet paper rolls. And just put it in the paper recycling. So off you go. And then the next day, someone says, down there where the recycling is, there's a bank. And here, I have this a bag here now, same kind of bag as you had yesterday, but now it's filled with $500,000. Can you go and just bring it to the bank for me? So chances are that you're still the same walk, same kind of bag, just what's inside is different, that as you walk that bag of money, chances are you're going to hold it a little bit tighter, probably a little bit closer. You're probably a little more committed to the bag than the toilet paper rolls. And you might, as you're walking down, you might not be thinking actively, I got to protect this bag and do this, but it's just kind of like it's almost, you've already had that kind of reflection as soon as they give you the bag, but there's a kind of, in the background, there's this kind of understanding, I need to be really committed to this bag. And so you stay there. So there's some kind of thought involved. So the same thing with this sustained attention. If you think, meditation is, it's nice to get to eventually, and it's kind of okay to do, and I've read some books on meditation, it seems like generally it's a good idea, and, some people I respect like to meditate, and, it's probably okay. That's very different than sitting down to meditate and saying, my life is not working anymore, and I really need to make a radical change, and I see how meditation can really help me. I'm up against big challenges in my life, and unless I can get my mind under control, I see myself going off the deep end or something. And then, it's really consequential. And so then when you sit down to meditate, you're not casual, and I'll check it out maybe, but it's like, this is really important. So the degree of commitment that we have to the object of attention has a lot to do with how we understand what we're doing. And you'll have a much more success up to a point if there is commitment to what you're doing than if you're kind of lackadaisical. It's okay. It's a nice. It's like vitamins. I know I'm supposed to take it, but I'll get to it eventually. And they tell me I'm supposed to eat more kale now, and I'll tomorrow maybe, and that's good. So part of this vitaka is commitment. And so some people, that's not a strength that they have. Is that, you know, they don't, that their strength of sustaining their attention, their commitment to something, is not something that is, you know, something, maybe a muscle they've operated. So this sustained attention is like a muscle that needs to be strengthened in order for meditation to work. If you try too hard, meditation doesn't work if you try too hard. But if you don't try enough, it doesn't work either. And so part of the art of meditation is finding just the right commitment, the right oomph for pressure to stay. And the amount of pressure you need to keep to stay depends a little bit on how distractible you are at that moment or how much you tend to be caught by other things. And one of the approaches of meditation is when you have strong forces of distraction, don't give it any attention. But just stay, 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 stay. Make that the most important thing. And if you understand the process of how by staying on one thing, how beneficial it can be, how it kind of rectifies the mind, how it helps the mind relax and settle or unify the mind, and how important it is to be of a calm, settled, unified, centered mind, joyous, happy mind, then perhaps it's easier to have the commitment and say, this is an important thing to do. If you think thinking about the dinner menu is the important thing to do, then why would you, you know, of course, your mind's going to go where it's, mind wants to go where it thinks it's important to go. And if you think thinking about food or thinking about sex or thinking about what's on TV or thinking about is important, your mind's going to go there. If you don't think that meditation is important, you know, it's going to be harder for the mind to stay present. So sometimes what's helpful, if what you want to do is develop the sustained attention, is before the meditation to have reflected and thought about how important this is for you. Is this really important? And to sit down with some intent. I'm here, I'm going to do this, this is what I'm going to do, as opposed to sit down kind of casually, lackadaisically, and, you know, just, I'll go sit down and, you know, see what happens. Now, one more thing, and then I'll take. So, as we settle into it, get into the groove of it, and the forces of distraction dissipate or relax, and it's easier and easier to be present, till some point it comes so easy to be present that it's actually becomes difficult to leave the present moment. You're so settled. It's kind of like if the time is like a bowl. If the mind is agitated, it's like the ball has all this energy that's going up and down and around all kinds of ways. But finally, when the ball dissipates all its energy, it comes and settles and at rest at the bottom of the bowl. And it's not going to go any direction, it's not going to go up the sides anymore. So if time is like a bowl and the present moment is the bottom of the bowl, then at some point in meditation, the mind is just there in the present moment and it doesn't want, not inclined to go up the sides anymore into the past, the future, and to fantasy or anything. And at that point, the vitaka and the vichara, these two kinds of attention, are no longer needed. These are activities of the mind. Mind is a little bit active when you do this. And you have to, you know, stay present. But once the mind is complete, you know, is so present it doesn't go anywhere, you don't have to try anymore. And so at that point, you can let go completely of that kind of effort. And it's, you know, then it's much more relaxing not to have that. But to let go of vitakka and vichara too soon, because it feels like work to do it, means that mind might actually stay doing its usual work, which you might be so habituated to, you don't think of as being work. But the ordinary thinking we have in our mind takes a lot of energy. And so when that quiets down, a lot of wonderful energy gets released and becomes available. And this is one of the reasons why rapture arises as a result of this vitakka and vichara being strong, or when they're strong enough that you don't no longer need them, is that this all this beautiful energy, vitality becomes available, and it flows into our capacity for joy and happiness, for rapture. So please, what's your question?
Question, I guess, maybe a bit personal how it relates. I notice the quality of my meditation is very different depending on the time of day I meditate, especially relative to when I sleep. So I used to meditate sort of in the afternoon and found that it was harder to start meditating, but once I meditated, I got into a much sort of more settled state, whereas now I meditate, first thing I get up in the morning, I'm not really thinking about anything, so it's kind of easy to start sitting.
Right.
And since I'm not really thinking about anything because I just woke up, I kind of, I'm not aware of much of a deepening state, but I'm not aware of thinking of much.
So the question is?
Oh, in terms of, like, time of day of meditation.
So the question is about the time of day to meditate, and you notice that different times of day has a different effect. In the early morning, there's not so much thought and activities, and so maybe it's easier to stay focused and present. At the end of the day, maybe there are more thoughts and activities. I think classically, the instructions, the classic idea of meditation is to do it early in the morning if you do it once a day, because of the benefits of, there's not so much activity going on, and you know, you're not ramped up for the day, and you don't have to ramp down in order to get present. And also, there's something, if you get up a little bit early before everyone else is kind of, the whole world is kind of busy, it's usually a beautiful stillness. And it's kind of nice to kind of feel the stillness that's somehow there early morning. But, from my point of view, with the answer to such questions, is experiment and learn what's beneficial. Different times of your life, different things might be beneficial. It might be beneficial to sit in the morning, get calm, settled, and it's a beautiful preparation for the day. The day goes smoother and easier because of doing that. Sometimes it's useful to sit at the end of the afternoon because then you get to sit with all the different feelings and concerns and agitation that's happened during the day, and you get to process it and work it out in a little more conscious way than you would be if you just, you know, went home and took a nap, or went home and watched television, or went home and do whatever you're going to do. Maybe it's a time to learn more deeply about what actually happened during the day and come to terms with it in a different way. And so sometimes it's useful to have the meditation at the end of the day or in the end of the afternoon because of what you can learn there. Now, I spent a long time in my life very beneficially doing both. The morning was very helpful. But it was really great. I meditated in the afternoon at 5:30 to 6:30, and as a way of clearing out and working through some of the things that happened at work during the day, and it was great. So I don't know. Is that an okay answer? Yes.
So I understand that for all types of meditation, that the breath is the anchor. And the type of meditation that you've been talking about tonight is more concentration meditation. You know, deciding ahead of time where your focus will be and sticking with that.
Right.
But there are many other types of meditation, and I wondered if maybe you could speak a little about choosing which type of meditation is most helpful at different places.
Yeah, there's many kinds of meditation. And so...
You've got 4 minutes.
4 minutes. So... You know, what I was teaching today is, you know, it's most often associated with concentration meditation more than mindfulness meditation. But there's different ways of doing mindfulness meditation, and the way I like to teach it is to teach it integrated together with some concentration so that they're not two separate practices. And so by giving priority to the breath is a great object both for mindfulness and concentration. The more concentrated you can get up to a point, the more beneficial the mindfulness can be. So developing mindfulness on the breath so it helps stabilize, steady, concentrate the mind is very beneficial. And then if something else happens that's more compelling than the breath, then let go of the breath and turn towards that. But more compelling is the operating word. If you can stay, you know, the commitment is there, you can stay and not get, and just think, well, that's not important. Thinking about dinner is not important. I just, you know, let that kind of just wash off the umbrella, wash off, you know, just stay on track, stay on track. I think that's really good. Another kind of meditation, which is sometimes taught in our circles, different way of doing mindfulness, is to have no primary focus at all for meditation except the present moment. And so there is no, the initial application of attention, if your mind was wander off in thought, is simply to come back to the present moment and be present for whatever is happening in the present moment, that moment, whatever is the predominant thing. And then the sustained application would be just stay in the present moment for the unfolding of experience in the present moment as it shows itself, as it occurs. Sometimes that's called choiceless awareness meditation or a very open mind, big mind meditation. You just stay present. Just be, and you stay present for noticing what comes into awareness as it flows and comes. So there's no single focus. So which one is beneficial? It depends a lot on you and the psychology and what goes on and how concentrated you are. Some people will tie themselves in knots if they're told to do anything in meditation. There's so much trying to control and expectation and measuring themselves and trying to be successful and doing it right and trying to manipulate their experience and force themselves into a box. And when you tell them what to do, like a particular technique or practice, it's really ugly, the results. And so they're better off doing a choiceless awareness where there's no focus of meditation at all. Just stay open and present. Don't try to. If you give them instructions, you tell them the instructions are: let go of any doing. As soon as you notice you're doing anything, stop it. And just thinking about, you know, your dinner is a doing, so you let go of that. So just kind of show up. So sometimes you choose meditation practices based on your own personal psychology and what works for you. A beautiful practice in our tradition is loving-kindness meditation, which is a concentration practice, does require the vitakka vichara, just to keep focused on it. And sometimes it's just a beautiful thing to do, to cultivate your loving-kindness. And sometimes it's taught if people have a lot of anger, or a lot of any kind of anger, but also a lot of self-criticism or self-loathing, or a lot of strong kind of negative feelings about oneself, then sometimes loving-kindness is a beautiful antidote that can heal that. And so then loving-kindness is taught. And in our particular, you know, Buddhist tradition, the vitakka and vichara is most commonly taught when people do loving-kindness meditation in a sustained way on retreats. And so you're doing it day after, you know, hour after hour, day after day, week after week on long retreats. And then because it's the only thing you're focusing on, it requires a lot of concentration. And as it gets more and more concentrated, this vitakka and vichara has an increasingly important role. So it's a big question, and that's, you know, has to be the... And Victor only gave me 4 minutes, and I took 6. So I hope that this kind of technical discussion about some of the elements of meditation will encourage you to experiment a little bit with this sustained attention. Just hang in there and see if you can stay there, stay put, without letting the mind or letting yourself get distracted or pulled this way and that way by all the things that can come up and pull you around. And just stay there. And you know, you're not going to be, you know, if you're not done it, haven't done this before, you're not going to be able to sustain it for very long initially, but it's like a muscle to get stronger. So you do it, and then you get pulled away. And rather than don't get discouraged, just say, great, I did it for 2 breaths. Now let's see if I can do it for 3 breaths and 4 breaths. And see if you can kind of see if you can slowly over time have the sustained attention last longer and longer. And as you do that, you'll probably find the longer you can keep it there, and the more, two things will happen. One is that your mind will settle down, you'll calm down and get focused and gather together. And the other, in the process of that, you'll learn a lot about yourself. You'll learn about all the different forces of distractions and preoccupations and things that pull you around. And it's good to learn about those things. Okay? So thank you.